Shrink Wrap Radio number 474, Dreams and Awareness Practices with Jungian therapist Machiel Clerc.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today, my guest is Machiel Clerc, M.A., who is founder of both the Jung Society of Utah and the website The Jung Platform. For more information about Machiel Clerc, please see our show notes on shrinkwrapradio.com. One of today's sponsors is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shrink. And before we go to the interview, I want to let all you professionals know that our strategic partner, the Jung Platform, has created CE courses from selected Shrink Wrap Radio interviews on topics such as dreams, relationships, synchronicity, trauma, and more. Go to www.jungplatform.com to see the latest courses. Now, here's today's interview. Machiel Clerc, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. We talk to each other a fair amount because you're the creator of the website, the Jung Platform, and you and I have been strategic partners for several years now. I think. I've lost track of time. We're not partners in a legal sense, but we do what we can to support each other's work. And I've certainly appreciated our arrangement, and I'm especially pleased to have this opportunity to speak with you here.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. It's a pleasure and honor to be here with you. I listened for many years to your programs and your interviews, and I think you've done an amazing job and brought a lot of joy to people all around the world and provided them with some educational opportunities.
Well, thank you for that. By the way, I believe you're originally from Amsterdam. I don't think we've ever talked much about that. And now you're settled in Salt Lake City, and that all sounds like quite a transition. I don't know the story behind all that.
Yeah, I was actually born in South Africa.
That rings a bell. I think you may have mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. And we lived there the first 4 years, and then my parents moved back to the Netherlands. And I lived in the north and in Amsterdam. And Amsterdam is really the other home. Uh-huh. And I went to school there. Then I started my career in business and founded a company with my boss, or my boss did it with me. And after several years, I told my boss, I need to travel.
What kind of company was that?
It was a company that provided internet technology to the hotel industry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So in a way, having the Jung Platform builds on your experience with the internet, I guess.
Right. It is a mixture between the creative play of business combined with the modern abilities to provide and develop interesting content over the internet.
I like your expression, the creative play of business. I wish more business people looked at it that way.
Yeah.
I actually was writing a report yesterday for a market research project that I finally got. My business in that area has kind of gone down. But I really enjoyed writing that report. I enjoyed the whole process of putting together a survey and then writing the report with all of the charts and graphs and so on. Mm-hmm. And really, it was like play for me.
Yeah. And in a good way, business should actually be play and a creative endeavor.
Yeah, yeah. And I see from your bio that you did some study at the Jung Institute in Zurich. I don't think I was aware of that. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was just after I told my boss I need to travel. I first spent a summer program at the Jung Institute in Zurich. And I've been deeply interested in Jung. And So there was a kind of a way of visiting the home of Jung.
Yeah.
And was the first time that I really spent a lot of time with Jungian analysts and other Jung-oriented people.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like quite an experiment. And then, so how did that get you to this country?
Well, I was after the Jung summer, and I started to travel around the world. I went to Asia, and I went with the backpack for a year.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of that journey, I was in China, and I got an email from my my boss, and he said, there's this company in Salt Lake City that is interested in buying us, and they asked if you wanted to come and help them out for 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I don't really have a job on this moment. And
yeah.
I said, I'll be back in 2 months, and I would love to go.
Wow. And so then somehow you transitioned to the graduate program at Pacifica,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, very soon when I came here, I picked up my my love for psychology, and I've always been really interested in that. And I went to Pacifica, did my master's degree in counseling psychology while I was working at a company here. And when I finished that program, I jumped ship or transitioned into my new career, and I have been a therapist for the last 8 years.
Yeah, well, what a journey it's been, and all around the world. And, you know, I typically, as you're aware, I'm interviewing authors with a new book. However, being a leading edge sort of guy, a digital sort of guy, you've not got a book, but rather a CD that's available for sale.
That's right, that's right. And in some way, the CD is a spoken book. And what I noticed is that a lot of people actually enjoy listening to ideas on dreams while sitting in the car or doing some easy task in their own home environment.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. And I do think it is substantial in the way that a book is substantial. There's a lot of great information on it. Let's see. We're going to be in our interview. We're going to be discussing some of the ideas that you cover in the CD. But first, let me ask, what led you to create it?
Yeah, I have always been writing down my ideas on psychology and on dreams for probably the last 20 years, and by now I have a dozen or more articles that are almost finished, and I could make one or two books of out of that. And several years ago, we had Coleman Barks, the main interpreter of Rumi, come to the Jung Society of Utah. It's a non-profit organization that I founded several years ago. And as a way to prepare for his event, I started to research the works of Rumi on their references to dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several. And I made a mini lecture series out of it. And one of these lectures I really worked out in detail, because it describes the basic fundamentals on how I see what a dream is, and which is a starting point to start working with dreams in the way that I do.
Okay, and what's the title of the CD?
It's called Rumi and the World of Dream.
Okay, excellent title. So without going into detail, maybe you can give us a broad sense of what it covers, and then we'll dig down more.
Yeah. What I do in the CD is I take a passage from a Rumi poem, and let me recite a poem to you.
Oh.
A man goes to sleep in the town where he has always lived, and he dreams he's living in another town. In the dream, he doesn't remember the town he's sleeping in his bed in. He believes the reality of the dream town. The world is that kind of sleep. And I think that in an astutely way describes some of the basic features of what we experience when we have a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I describe three of them on the CD. And the first one is that what Rumi says, he dreams he's living in another town. So that describes the experience of being in a world where you interact. The second point that I make is that once you're in the dream, you are in a certain reality. There's the dream reality, and there's the reality that the man has when he lays in his bed, his daytime reality. And I call that dream reality and dense reality. We can talk later on why I do that in that way. And the third point is, I think that one of the biggest mistakes people make around sleep is to think that you're not awake. But when the body is in the physiological condition of sleep, the mind is actually awake.
Right.
And that awakeness is the engagement in the world of dream where we have all these experiences.
Yeah, I think that was one of the surprising things to emerge out of the technology and, you know, monitoring the brain, and to see that the brain was very, very active during sleep.
Yeah.
So that's been fascinating. Now, I believe that you've had some personal experiences in the inner world of dreams and visions and so on. Why don't you share with us whatever you feel comfortable around that?
Yeah. When I was 23, I entered in a very turbulent phase that probably lasted about a year, in which I had dreams and visions and some out-of-body experiences, and I started to see the world melt in a way that it looked like matter and psyche were of one substance. And probably why I ended up in that kind of trouble was started already early on. And I remember at the age of 10, I was standing with my mother and sister waiting in front of the bedroom of my parents. And on that moment, I still thought it can't be true. This they must have made a mistake. And then when we entered the room, I saw my dad laying there in the casket, and he was dead. Mm. And I immediately saw it. He's dead. And even if I had never seen a dead person by that time before, you know, you just know on that moment. And
this there, is in reality, not a dream.
This is reality, yeah, when I was 10.
Wow.
And that really ripped me open to a certain openness to the other world or the world of dream. Mm-hmm. And I lived in a culture that that couldn't really deal well with the grief, nor my family was really well with grief and loss. And so for years I couldn't talk about it. And it became this dark cloud hanging over my adolescent years into my early 20s. And it became a meaningless experience. I was 22, 23, and I didn't know what I wanted to do in the future. There was all this unresolved grief and loss, anger towards the world in a certain way for being in this kind of form. And I didn't go to school that much anymore, so I saw my school results drop dramatically. And by some good fortune, I stumbled on the works of Carl Jung. Mm-hmm. And he provided a way of listening to your own dreams, listening to your inner life, understanding synchronicities. And then as a kind of an eruption, I went through this phase in which I started to pay attention to my dreams, and they were very significant. And I had visions that reconnected me with the world of dream and gave me some understanding about life and death. And that that is where it all began.
Wow. And were you fearful for your sanity when this began?
Right. Yeah. I was months on end, I would wake up at night and I would be completely in sweat. Mm. And I had to change my T-shirt because I had been so fearful at night. I had fainting spells here and there that I needed to leave the classroom because I was afraid to pass out. And I was thinking, I was really afraid that I was going crazy.
Was this while you were an undergraduate then?
Yeah.
And so had you been exposed to the concept of a spiritual emergency? I mean, I imagine that's how you would look at it now.
Right. Now I would more think in terms of an initiation or a dream initiation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at that time, the religious system that I was brought up in had lost its power a little bit because my dad died and I couldn't make sense of God and why God would do that, mm-hmm. and the inability to grieve. I was a relative secular environment and I didn't have a mentor to guide me through this.
Wow. Is there a dream or two that you still remember from that period that you could share with us and give us some sense of what it meant to you?
Yeah, what I had many dreams in that period, and what I really noticed that is that dreams help and can be an helping and guiding force, mm-hmm. depending on the relationship with the dream. And there were small dreams that guided me in becoming more proactive and integrating my assertiveness to larger dreams that reconnected me with my father. Mm-hmm. And one dream I remember very well that was very healing for me was where I was standing in a beautiful green hilly field environment with hills at the side, and a group of people, probably 100 in festive colors, orange and red and yellow, came walking towards me, and they were singing and they had palm leaves in their hands. And then when they were very close, I noticed that they were carrying on their hands my father, and that this was actually a funeral, and that they were about to bury him. And then when my dad, when they came to me, they led my dad on the ground to me, and I saw him, and I took my father's head and I put it against my heart. And that was something I did when I was young. He did that to me, and he died because of an open heart operation that didn't work.
Yeah.
And I put his head against my heart, and I said, "Dad, now you can listen to my heart, just as I did to yours."
I choke up a little just hearing that story. Yeah. It must have been very reassuring to you when you discovered that Jung went through this period of intense, the inner world welling up and so on, that must have really comforted you when you discovered that.
Jung was the great guide in that period and in the initial years. When I read that chapter on the confrontation with the unconscious, where he describes that he was fearful that he would be crazy, that he would go crazy, where he said, "You must make sure that you stay in the world and have a job and work." So I made sure that I would go to school every day and would do my basic things, mm-hmm. so that I would not lose a certain relationship with reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you say that having gone through those experiences have made you a more effective psychotherapist?
Yeah, I think that that one's own journey is of vital importance to... Mm-hmm. To the work as a therapist, and this experiential belief or the experience that you can move through really difficult situations to learn to read the clues that dreams or the world around you can provide in how to navigate through trouble has been very helpful, and I learned a way to engage and have a relationship with, let's say, the world of dream and its inhabitants and this world. And that is part of the style that I coined dream dialogue, and that I work, that is a kind of a working premise in my work with my clients.
Okay, so let's get into that, and maybe it's good to go back to the three basic characteristics of the dream. Yep. That you began with, and maybe expand on each of those for us.
Well, I emailed you and I said, Dave, if you by chance have a dream or a dream fragment that you would be willing to share, then we could use that as a way to describe these characteristics.
Oh, okay. I was anticipating that, but I thought it would come more towards the end. Shall we get into that now, the experiential part?
Yeah, and it's just a description of your dream, and if you can just sense into the dream and describe it in the present tense, and just this fragment, then we'll work with that.
Okay, now I have it written out, but I take it that you'd rather that I not read it, but that I just really try to go back into it now.
That's right.
It's from a couple nights ago, so my memory is not as vivid as it might have been, but I'll do that.
Yeah.
I am in a classroom or workshop, and I'm not totally sure where it is, but it seems to be an art class or art workshop, and I don't consider myself to be someone who is, quotes, an artist in terms of having much skill in that, you know, with painting or drawing or things like that. But somehow in this moment in the workshop that I'm in, I have a real sense of confidence, and I'm just kind of tearing into my project, which is sort of a multimedia thing that I'm creating with paper. And so I have in my vision for this project, I picture bold stripes of kind of heavy, stiff paper and blocking on it. It's sort of cardboardy type paper of different colors. And underneath that, there's going to be a bed of crumpled up paper, and that will be underneath the whole thing, so that it will have this sort of wrinkly texture. And what will be towards the bottom of this artwork, with the stripes above and laid over the crinkly paper, is some other paper that's shiny, reflective, maybe gold kind of looking paper, with a pattern of little circles with stars in the center. So there are lots of these circles and stars in the pattern. And my plan is to press down very hard with a piece of glass, and that somehow will push it all together in the dream. It's going to bond that so that it becomes a whole thing. Now, as I'm working on this, I think I'm pretty far along, and I become aware of someone at the head of the room who I guess is a teacher, and it's a man, and I'd say in his middle years, and he's kind of stocky in a way, not fat, but not tall or thin. He's kind of short, muscular, very manly looking guy with sort of tousled dark hair. And I, running throughout this dream is a sense that in the background of my mind is, I know I need something to present in this interview today. And I'm not generally really good at dream incubation, but clearly this was for this interview.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing, and also your diligently thinking about it even in the dream. So to go to that first point, if when you are what you described was that you were in this room and you were interacting with the materials, and you were interacting with the teacher and have an engagement with it. And
I left out an important part, I think.
Yeah,
which, go ahead. Which was, so I went up to him.
Yeah.
And I wanted to initiate some kind of interaction between us. And interestingly, we ended up doing some kind of martial arts, Tai Chi, bow to one another, and then we moved into a sitting position, and he commented on how graceful I was as I moved into the sitting position. And so it was, I felt very special that I was, that by his focus on me was communicating to the whole class, you know, don't disturb him. We're doing something special. I'm feeling very honored in that process.
Yeah, beautiful. What I hear you describe is how you engage with this teacher. You do a martial arts kind of ceremony, and that is the very simple first observation of a dream, namely that you are in a dream. And that the dream takes place around you, and that you are interacting in the dream.
Yeah.
And this sounds very simple, which it also is. But there's a tendency in especially Western psychology to see a dream as a kind of a letter from a mystery source X being sent to you that then is in a certain symbolic language that need to be deciphered. And if you do that, you get a very flat understanding of what a dream is. It is then only in the letter or maybe the movie metaphor. Some people think it's a movie that you watch at night. But then you get in one directional communication thought, where actually a dream is an interactive experience. And the dream is what Robert Wagoner called a co-creation, your own actions and the dream world co-create a dream. So it's a creation in that moment, and that has a lot of very important implications for the way one works with a dream.
Okay.
First of all, it indicates that it's a world and not a letter. So you can have a different relationship in that world. You can start building a relationship to the dream teacher, or you can and then get to some information. And probably Jung's technique of active imagination comes out of those possibilities. You can really sense into the experience of what it is to be special. You can even get a sense of the dream teacher if you look long enough at him and get a certain way of being possessed by this teacher, like the works of Robert Bosnack and his embodied imagination.
Yeah, I have to say that just in the process of when I cut back in to add more about the teacher, that felt very good in this moment, as a kind of like I think what you're describing. Was I was really kind of back there and realizing and having that experience of feeling somewhat valued and treasured.
Right. And let's assume that one person would say, oh, Dave, interpreting this, you can feel more special, or it would be good for you to feel special. Well, that is one. But the question is, after that, how do you do that? And by re-entering the dream, and by slowing it down and really sensing what it is like to be special, you have an embodied experience of being special.
Yeah.
And so you don't need to think, how do you do it? It is you start training and being in that state of being special that that can create a shift in consciousness. And that is, I think, a consequence of seeing the dream as a world. Very important.
Okay, and I got a little sense of that, you know.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
And another aspect of it is that the I lost my train of thought. So.
Well, there's another one coming to the station very soon.
Good.
Yeah. What Maybe you were going to go into the second characteristic. I think we did the first. Are we into the second characteristic
yet? The other implication of that it is an environment and an experience is that what has shown in neuroscience is that actually dreams trigger the healing response.
Really?
And there's very few things that we know that trigger the healing response. And this comes out of healing research and the placebo research. And we know that touch can do it, and attention, and recognition, all these things that that work throughout all types of therapy. But one of the things that also triggers the healing response is being in touch with dreaming consciousness, with the dream. And
I've long believed that, you know, from an intellectual, philosophical, Jungian point of view, but I wasn't aware of any research that kind of anchored that.
And therefore it's important also to have an experiential engagement with the dream, because then you are in touch with that state of consciousness and you can feel special, or you can feel what it is to create something and be in touch with those states.
Okay. So did that get us through the three characteristics?
No, this is just characteristic number one with its implications.
Okay.
I'll go to number two.
Good.
And number two is what you noticed was that you were in a world of dream.
Yes.
And in my own way of working with dreams, I used to call dream life dream reality and this world waking life. Mm-hmm. And to really separate those two worlds. And what we in general have a tendency, a problem to acknowledge the reality of dream. The moment we come out of the world of dream into this reality, there's a huge tendency to minimize. Oh, it was just a dream, or it's not that important as this reality. However, when you're there, you don't really think about the reality that you lay in your bed in, the so-called waking life. And so one part is to really understand that that is a reality in and on itself, inhabited with states of consciousness or figures that have that do things and sometimes can be very beneficial. And the other part is that I used to call this life waking life, and I noticed that that was a mistake. For the following reason, I'll share quickly a dream I had, and in that dream I become lucid. I become aware that I'm dreaming, and I look around, and I had prepared for it, and I thought, let me ask for a kind of an drink that keeps me lucid for 5 minutes.
Great idea.
and nothing happened when I asked for it. Then I tried to do another thing, to have the clouds change a little bit. And it doesn't work. So now I start wondering, am I really in a dream?
Huh.
And I feel myself, and I feel my mind, and I think, oh my gosh, I'm totally awake. I'm so awake that this must be waking life.
Uh-huh.
And then I lose lucidity again. And the dream continues. And so I thought, oh, let me call dream reality, and this reality, dense reality, because it's denser than the world of dream.
Yeah.
But waking life is a misidea of the state. And
yes,
that leads to that third point where when you are in a dream, you are actually, your mind is awake, but not completely aware. It's aware only till in different degrees, from completely unaware even that it is in a dream and takes the shark serious, or the monster that is being chased, or you're in India and there's no questioning whether even that would be if that is would not be dense reality. And what you had in your dream, that you was this thought in the background. Oh, Michiel did ask me to share a dream. And so there was some awareness around that.
Yeah.
All the way up to full-blown lucidity, where you have an understanding of where you are and the impact of your own being in that world. And
yeah, I didn't make it quite that far, but it, that awareness could have been a good trigger to to become more lucid. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And I believe that you've gone on in your work to discover a fourth feature. What's that about?
Yeah. Yeah. It, the fourth feature is really that dream reality and dense reality coexist and are interconnected. And here again, neuroscience came recently. I listened to a lecture where someone said there, metaphorically, we can think about this, that there are two streams of consciousness, waking consciousness or dense reality consciousness, and dreaming consciousness. And they operate at the same time. So the moment that you have sit at your desk and you have a daydream, it's the dreaming consciousness that comes up a little bit, or the waking consciousness sinks in it. Fantasies are on that same spectrum.
Yeah.
And at night, probably these two states merge, and the ego or the dense, the waking consciousness goes into the dream consciousness and does its thing. And that is a different way of seeing the dream than just thinking about a dream as an event that takes place at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that letter that you get at night or the movie that you've seen. It's an it's not a turn on and turn off event. But it is probably better to think in dreams as tuning in, tuning into the world of dream. And when you know that this dreaming consciousness and waking consciousness coexists, what Jung would probably call the ego with the unconscious, or what the indigenous culture would call this world and the other world, which are all being seen as coexisting realities.
Yeah. I like the way you're putting this. It gives me kind of a different take on something that I already am believing what you're saying, because I really think it's in Freud, and he talks about primary conscious and secondary primary thinking and secondary thinking, that's the terms. And so I've that always made a deep impression on me, but I've never formulated it quite the way that you said it, which I think is excellent.
Thank you. And there, the consequence again to that is by knowing that, we can do certain activities that nurture and foster a relationship to the other world, or the world of dream.
Yeah.
And then we have an increased sense of intuition. There's the sense of that there is actually a guiding principle that helps one along, and sometimes kicks one along, but has a certain aim to the realization of one's own being. And one can also, in the technique that I think of as dream dialogue, have a dialogue with dreaming while being in this reality, that there, that the dream beings don't cease to exist when you wake up, but this teacher that you talked about might still be present. And so you could talk to this teacher, you could perhaps sense into its presence, you could ask it for help. Gosh, I'm getting a little stuck in my creative project here. Do you have an intuition for me? And then you just listen and see if anything happens.
Uh-huh.
And then you yeah.
Yeah, that's, again, I like the way that you're talking about this. I mean, I'm familiar with the idea of dialoguing with characters in a dream, and gestalt dialogues and so on, but there's something about the texture of your approach that's giving it a little bit of a different feel. And I was thinking that in shamanic tribal cultures, of course, they have a whole raft of tools to help move a person into that space, which might be drumming or dancing, mm-hmm. singing, chanting, staying up all night, etc. So this is a sort of way for us to dip our toes into a kind of shamanic sense of reality.
Right. And I think any kind of form of ritual is a way to connect with the world of dream. Mm-hmm. And good rituals used to start always with a song or a prayer or a dance or a poem. And we can turn almost any daily event into a ritual. And a ritual is a way to invite the mystery source of life to flow in and to actually make life a little bit mysterious and mystify us. Mm-hmm. So you don't know more, but you start knowing less and you become more in awe and wonder for the experience of life.
It feels a little synchronistic that you're talking about this ritual and that my interaction in the dream with the teacher began with a little ritual beginning.
Right, yeah. And so the dream work could be that you enact that ritual like the indigenous culture would probably prescribe. Mm-hmm. And that helps you get in touch with this teacher that might be beneficial to you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have some of the bias of the detective approach, of the letter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me it seems unquestionable that dreams comment on our dense waking life.
Yeah.
That they reflect our emotional concerns of the day and so on. So how does that viewpoint,
yeah,
which to me is incontrovertible, you know, having worked with dreams for a long time, heard lots mm-hmm. of other people's dreams, and having kept a dream journal myself for many, many years,
yeah,
how do we integrate those two viewpoints? Is it an either or is there some way that they coexist?
Yeah, that is the fifth point, actually, that I, afterwards, after I developed the CD, crafted.
Uh-huh.
And the fifth point has to do with looking at the dream as made up out of different layers of different phenomena. And layer one is that a dream is the... Here again, neuroscience comes to the help with an interesting description, saying that dreaming is the form that thinking and feeling takes on while the body is in the physiological condition of sleep. Now,
okay, say that again.
Yeah. So the neuroscience says, or some neuroscience say, dreaming is the form that thinking and feeling takes on while the body is in the physiological condition of sleep.
Okay, yeah.
Now we know that the dream is a world, an environment. So thinking and feeling takes on a three-dimensional manifestation in which we find ourselves. So for a big part, the dream is a presentation of our thoughts and feelings that are often carryovers and carry-ons from the dense reality. And then there are other aspects that a dream is made of. But this is step one. And the way that thinking often happens at the primary level of where dreaming displays is in metaphorical or in symbolic ways. So you might be in a dream driving in your car and getting to an dead end.
Yep.
That would be the way that the mind in a metaphorical form describes getting to a dead end,
mm-hmm.
Being stuck somewhere in your life.
Right.
or I arrive at a crossroad. And then the thought of crossroad is metaphorically displayed in a three-dimensional world. And that is what this dream environment does. So that is one layer, and I add another layer to it, and then I come back to the question that you asked about the interpretation. The second part is that because we know it's a co-creation, the dream, that what you see, and you can see this best in the lucid state, but you can test it in any state, is that partially some of the dream figures and characters are manifestations of your thoughts. Let's say I would be writing an article in the dream, on dreams, have a self-critical thought, then the door would open up and my aunt comes in, who I experience to be as hypercritical. So my thought takes on the form and shape of aunt, mm-hmm. of my aunt. And here's where dream interpretation works, because you would ask the question, what do you associate to aunt? And I would say, oh, aunt is very critical. And so you would say, oh, criticalness has entered into the room. And with that first part, the tendency to think in metaphors and symbols is why dream interpretation works as well. We can for a big part understand if we understand metaphor and symbol and ask associations what these manifestations or thoughts and feelings are in the dream world. Mm-hmm. And that is where I think it's not an either or, but it is this is what a dream is and does. And one layer to look at a dream is through interpretation.
And the other way that you're proposing, not instead of, but maybe in addition to, is to enter into that world, try to cultivate that world and understand it, that inner world, in its own terms, rather than trying to make a direct intellectual connection.
Yeah. And I do think the dream world is a little bit more complex than I just said. There's another layer where there's also the encounter with states of consciousness that are truly other, that isn't oneself. Jung would probably call that the figures that live in the collective unconscious. But to come back to, let's say I'm being chased in a dream by a monster. Or my boss is yelling at me, and I want to say something back, but it just, woof, all the energy goes away, and I get just blank out. Now, in interpretation, you could see, there's this problem with aggression when an aggressive force presents itself as boss. You freeze up, and then think about ways to start working on that issue. It's a diagnostic model or a structural analysis of what happens in the dream. When you then re-enter dream and you start getting in touch with the boss in the dream and start sensing a little bit of his aggression, and harvest some of that that aggression, then you get in touch with that state of energy, just like you felt special. And then you almost like an homeopathic dose, take something off it and take it in. And then you can change your own state of consciousness through a direct experience of being aggressive. You feel it in your body, you feel it how it is. You have this relationship now with aggression, and then things can really change. So I think on a more fundamental level, by being in an experience and relationship to the dream figures, you can trigger the healing response, and you can change the state of consciousness And I do, and that's where I think is the benefit of the experiential approach. However, the interpretive approach can help as a kind of a diagnostic model, because the dream indeed does express in metaphorical and symbolic way thoughts and emotions that we carry from the day. Our thoughts, to a certain extent, express themselves in our environment as characters that we know that we can learn about. So both ways can be used, and it is usually better to start with the experience, because the moment you get into the interpretive mode, you start already knowing all these things about the dream characters or about the dream, and it's very hard to get through the filter of your bias to the direct experience.
Okay, well, you've given me some good stuff to think about here. I know I have been exposed to some of these ideas. James Hillman seems to be lurking in the background here.
Right.
And I wrestle with that, but your presentation has connected for me. So I suspect that many of my listeners will be intrigued by what you've been saying, and I'm wondering, how can listeners order your CD?
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Well, before I go there, I want to indeed, for a moment, honor all the other dream workers from whom I've stealing freely.
Sure.
And Hillman and Jung and Freud and the African tradition, in the Hillman and the archetypal tradition, Robert Bosnack has been one that I borrowed freely from, Robert Wagoner in the Lucid Dreams. So there's many people. And I encourage the listeners also to steal whatever they like from this and try it for themselves. And I use the word stealing instead of borrowing, because stealing has this element of making it really your own. And take it on, try it on. Does it work? It's great. If you don't resonate with it, equally fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my good. Little thanks to all the people on whom I indebted to.
How about Steven Eisenstadt too, who head of Pacifica, and he wrote a book that persuasively makes at least some of these same points.
Right, and with the Jung Society of Utah, we've had Steve Eisenstadt twice, and I engaged with him and did his workshop and read his book. And it is one of the ways that is an experiential relationship to dreams and can be used as a tool. And I laid out those five features of a dream that then allow different variations of moving around.
Yeah, yeah. So coming back to the questions of how listeners can get your CD.
yeah. Very important, of course. It just started to be released, and it is doing surprisingly well. So listeners can get it on either the jungplatform.com or at dreamdialogue.com. And if they use the discount code Dr. Dave, they get a 25% discount on the CD till the end of the year. So that's till the end of 2015. And after that, there will be a standard 10% discount if you use Dr. Dave, D-R-D-A-V-E, and capitals or not, doesn't matter. You type it in, you get a discount. And that's how they can get it.
Oh, I'm feeling honored, just like in my dream. Yeah, all right. I like that. Well, as we wind down here, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, more that it has been for me a great honor to be on your show, and so your dream of feeling special and being honored, I have that same feeling. It's been a great joy to be with you. I admire your interview technique, and I think you do a marvelous work that benefits many people around the world.
Well, thank you so much. And Lachiel Clark, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You know, I've interviewed a number of the mentors mentioned by today's guest, Lachiel Clark. For example, I've interviewed Robert Wagoner on lucid dreaming, Robert Bosnack on Jung's Red Book and Dreaming, Steve Eisenstadt on dream tending, and Patricia Berry, who is James Hillman's former wife, on the Hillmanian understanding of dreams. And I have to say I've struggled a bit to fully incorporate what I'll refer to as the Hillmanian approach to dreams into my own thinking and work with dreams. Clearly, Lachiel has put together his own synthesis of this approach, and it's rooted not only in theory, but also in his own intense experience with dreams and visions. I must say I'm impressed by his presentation today. I think more than any other, he's opened me up to this approach. For so many years, I've been immersed in the, quotes, unopened letter, or, quotes, detective work, close quote, dream interpretation perspective that has been difficult for me to give it up. This is the first time I've been really clear that it doesn't have to be either or, but can be both and. And there's nothing in Lachiel's presentation that fights with what I already know or think I know about dreams. But his presentation has really helped me to get a sense of integrating both perspectives. I highly recommend his CD to you. It's not very expensive to begin with, but he's offered a tremendous 25% discount to listeners who use the discount code of Dr. Dave, that's D-R-D-A-V-E, at www.jungplatform.com before the end of 2015 and 10% off thereafter. I think you should jump on it. It will make a nice addition to your audio library.
I have a confession to make. I am a shrink wrap radio addict. That's right. Dr. Dave has me totally hooked. I'm devouring episode after episode, so I figured it's only fair to make a donation. And, you know, if you're enjoying these shows too, perhaps you should think about making a donation. Maybe even just a one-off one. Every little bit helps. Go on, you know it'll make you feel good.
Thank you, Louise. That makes at least two of us who are addicted to shrink wrap radio. Won't you other addicts out there own up to your addiction and support your local pusher, which is to say me? We do have several new donors since the last episode whose names have been added to the honor roll, and they are Carol Agrimason, Jeffrey Backstrom, and Meredith Pitt. You know, it's been some time since I've mentioned the CE units for professionals that we offer through the Zur Institute. There are over 100 continuing education units based on shrink wrap radio interviews there, and they're grouped into courses. In fact, you can get a 10% discount on all my courses there, plus any other courses or private practice materials, whether by me or not, that are offered through the Zur Institute by going to www.zurinstitute.com and using the discount code DRDAVE88. In other words, DRDAVE88. And those are numerals, 88, with no space in between the E and the 88. So in other words, you have your run of the whole site with hundreds of courses, and you get a 10% discount on anything that you choose. So I really encourage you to do that. By the way, let me once again call attention to one of our sponsors. That's Dr. Hedaya, the founder of Whole Psychiatry. And he's been on Shrink Wrap Radio a couple of times. And he's both a psychiatrist and also a psychopharmacologist. And he's offering his unique herbal blend on our website called Unflame, and you can save $5 on every bottle of Unflame that you order using the link that's in the right-hand sidebar on our site. And there is a checkout code, a discount code, of UNFL1815. It's also right there in the right-hand sidebar. You can see that discount code, and that's going to save you $5 on every bottle you buy. And it's something that I have ordered and continue to use myself. So that's the basis of my recommendation. And finally, for any of you who are not already members of Audible.com, my favorite audiobook service, my recommendation today is in keeping with today's topic. I'm recommending The Life and Ideas of James Hillman, Volume 1, The Making of a Psychologist. And it's written by Dick Russell and narrated by Fred Sanders. And the length is 21 hours. So that's a lot of educational goodness. And I think I'll take a chance today and just give you a little bit of an audio sample of what we're talking about.
Here I am working toward a psychology of soul that is based in a psychology of image. Here I am suggesting both a poetic basis of mind and a psychology that starts neither in the physiology of the brain, the structure of language, the organization of society, nor the analysis of behavior, but in the processes of imagination. James Hillman, Revisioning Psychology. On October 29, 1996, The Oprah Winfrey Show opened with the TV talk hostess holding up a copy of a new book called The Soul's Code. When I discover something that I think will enhance your life or add to your perception of why you're here on the planet and what you're working toward, I always like to share it with you, she said. Seated next to Winfrey was a tall, thin, bespectacled gentleman with close-cropped white hair. He had penetrating blue eyes and a bird-like countenance that brought to mind an eagle.
And so on. So if you're not already an Audible.com subscriber, you can get this audiobook for free and to keep with no obligation to continue your subscription by going to audibletrial.com/shrink. And of course, if that's not to your taste, they now have more than 180,000 other titles for you to choose from.
Hi, this is Francis Weller, psychotherapist and author, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Francis Weller, who was my spectacular guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 279, Grief, Ritual, and the Soul of the World. As I said last time, I could use some more of these on-the-couch transitions, and you don't have to have been a guest on the show or to have written a book. Just a listener willing to contribute a bit of audio is all that is needed. I'll read three emails from our listener community, which are actually announcements that I've been asked to pass on to you. First, we hear from Dr. James Alexander, longtime listener, supporter, and past guest, writing from Down Under, and he says, "Hello, Dr. Dave. I hope this email finds you well. Last year, I was amongst a group of psychologists and psychotherapists who brought Dr. Niall Gagan, I guess that's how it's pronounced, to Sydney for the very first Coherence Psychology Institute workshop in coherence therapy held in Australia. Of the 35 participants, I was pleased to hear in the conversations many references to great Shrink Wrap Radio interviews. I know that your program has many followers in Australia, so I wonder if you'd be willing to mention that Dr. Gagans is coming back here in November this year for another series of workshops. He'll be conducting introductory and intermediate level workshops in coherence therapy in both Sydney and Melbourne. This is an excellent opportunity for your Australian and New Zealand listeners to learn experientially how to launch therapeutic memory reconsolidation in clients via coherence therapy as described by your former guest, Bruce Ecker. If your listeners from other parts of the world have been thinking about a trip to Australia, this would be a great time to combine learning with pleasure at the start of the Australian summer. Those interested can obtain more information from Simon Dorsonia on simon@simondo.com. simonsimon@simonsimon.com.au. Let me give you that link. It's simon@simondo.com.au. And he closes with thanks and best wishes, James. And I wrote back saying, hey, maybe you could give us some dates for me to announce. So actually, I heard from the formerly mentioned Simon Dersonia, and he writes, Dr. Dave and James, hello again. Sydney, NSW, is from the 14th through the 15th for the introductory workshop in November. It's 2 days covering core skills and process. And then again in Sydney, NSW, the 16th, 15th, and 17th of November, coaching in small groups for those who have completed the introductory workshop. And there's a discount for those who take all 4 days. And then in Melbourne, Victoria, the 20th through the 22nd of November, a 3-day introductory covering core skills plus 1 day of coached practice in small groups. Well, if you recall, I am a big fan of Bruce Ecker and his work in memory consolidation, which goes by the name of coherence therapy. And so if you can attend any of these workshops, I highly encourage you to do so. And I'm sure you can, if you need more details, I'm sure you can dig up information on the web. If you run into a problem where you just absolutely cannot find the information that you need, drop me a line and I'll put you in touch with the right people. And finally, we get one from Frederick Madison, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. I've worked with suicidal clients in Metaphor. For 25 years, I've worked as the primary day therapist with over 16,000 suicidal patients on the mental health unit of a large public hospital near Seattle. From that direct experience, I created an educational therapy for people with deep despair, hopelessness, and/or recurrent suicidal thinking. It's called Contextual Conceptual Therapy, or CCT. Last September, exactly 1 year ago, I was the keynote speaker at the 2014 World Suicide Prevention Day Conference. Title of my talk was Breaking Suicide's Code, Understanding the Metaphorical Language of the Suicidal Person. From the response I received, I've been invited back to Ireland in November to present a 2-day training in both Cork and Dublin. I'm writing you for 3 reasons. 1, to thank you for today's wonderful broadcast with Kim. That was the one on Metaphor. 2, to wonder if you have any contacts in Ireland with whom to share our training information. Also, 3, if you can, to please pass on our contact info to Laura Just, who might be interested to come from London to attend our training in Dublin. Again, thanks a lot. I'm now planning to be a regular listener, and that's from Frederick Madison. And let me give you a way to contact Frederick if you're at all interested in more information about this. You can get to his website at www.suicidetherapy.com. So this looks like a very interesting workshop as well. If you do contact him, please let him know that you heard about it from me. And, you know, I was so interested in the profile that Frederick provided me with, that, and I did reach out to the people I know in Ireland, but I thought, boy, he would make a good guest. So I invited him to be a guest, and surprisingly, he turned me down. I guess he's just too busy right now and overloaded with these workshops that he's conducting. But I think he did indicate that that might be more of a possibility down the line. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up for today. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. And you can leave voicemail on our message phone at 415-830-4014. Thanks to today's guest, Machiel Clerc, for sharing his dream work process. My next interview will be with John Markoff, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times science writer and author of the 2015 book, Machines of Loving Grace, The Quest for Common Ground Between Humans and Robots. As you know, this is an exciting topic for me. So that is if you've been reading the monthly newsletter that we send out. So I'm very excited about his book, and I'm looking forward to discussing it with him. And I hope you'll join us for that conversation. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.